You've been camping in your backyard, cycling in your living room. You've been enjoying rain showers in your bathroom, campfires on your TV screen. You've been counting stars and birds from your window and holding family cookouts in the kitchen. Now, get ready to go. Go on a real vacation. Take the wheel at your nearest RV dealer or at GoRV.com.
This podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Reality Check Podcast Network.
Welcome to RTW Rewind. Red Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Red Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. I am your host, as always, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. Hope everyone's doing well. Hope you've been enjoying the interviews that I've been putting out lately. Such fantastic guests that we've had, over the course of the show over the last several weeks. And, a couple weeks ago, I did an introduction to how I first became a wrestling fan and talked a lot about the WWF stuff. That got me hooked on watching wrestling in 1989, and I didn't really cover the NWA / WCW stuff, so that's what I'm going to be doing right now. The first memory that I have of watching the NWA, it was still known in 1989, even though I believe Ted Turner had owned it at that point, but had not rebranded yet. The ring apron still said NWA. They still had their little, their promos, the NWA, where we wrestle, which, they weren't the glitz and glamour like WWE was, WWF was. They had better wrestlers, to be quite honest. Most people say better workers, if you want to use that term. But the last episode, I mentioned my neighbor, Billy, who I watched, several events with in 1989. I was over his house one night, and I'm trying to remember when it was. It was the Clash of Champions. I want to say it was February. I think it was like a week or so before the Chi-Town Rumble, which was the first NWA pay-per-view I ever got. And I remember being over there, and he turned on TBS. And I remember seeing the Road Warriors there. I remember seeing the Steiners, the Varsity Club. But one thing that really, really caught my attention, and we had collected baseball cards and stuff like that. And I think I went over there to open up some cards that he had bought for me back in the day. With the old Topps baseball cards, open up the pack and eat the bubble gum. And I think I really just wanted the bubble gum more than anything. but he's a big card collector. Back then, he was a Yankees fan. He had Don Mattingly rookie cards, he turned on the TV, or he had it playing on in the background. He was a wrestling fan anyway. And this Clash of the Champions was on TV, and I believe that was Clash 5. The Road Warriors and Tenryu took on the Varsity Club, Mike Rotunda, Kevin Sullivan, and Steve Williams in a six-man tag match. I remember those guys cutting a promo. I remember seeing the Road Warriors and the Varsity Club cutting promos. But like I said, the one thing that really caught my eye was the contract signing between Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat obviously wrestled through the Crockett territories and in the mid-Atlantic area in Charlotte over the years, which I didn't know about that until years later. So this was the first introduction that I had with Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair, for that matter. And I just remember them getting into an argument, and Ricky Steamboat ripping Ric Flair's clothes off, and Rick was standing there in his underwear. Nothing new for Ric Flair, as I've learned much, you know, later on in the following years. In fact, you know, he's a bit of a showman, let's just say. So he didn't mind being out there in his underwear in front of, you know, 10,000 people or whatever, and a million watching on TV. But that was like, wow, what? That was like the drama between those two really sucked me in. So, as I mentioned last time, I had gotten the Royal Rumble that January. Well, this is February, and this is my first NWA pay-per-view, which I want to get. And it was February 20th, 1989, the Chi-Town Rumble in Chicago. And let me tell you something. There's the UIC Pavilion, and the main event was Ric Flair against Ricky Steamboat for the World Heavyweight Championship. And Ric Flair at that time was the five-time champion, I believe. I don't remember a lot about that event. You know, the mid-card and undercard didn't really stick with me that much. You know, I just really remember the main event. And you'd think I would remember Sting and Dusty Rhodes against the Road Warriors and stuff like that. But, like, the Varsity Club were there. The Fantastics were there. The other match I remember, other than Flair and Steamboat, was the Midnight Express, Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane, against the original Midnight Express, Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose, because I remember Condrey and Rose from wrestling the Midnight Rockers in the AWA in 1988. You know, the first actual match that drew me in. It made me want to watch more wrestling. So, kind of funny how that happened, right? How they end up in, they're in the AWA, and then now they're in the NWA. They didn't last long in NWA. I think it was pretty much a one-off. It's just kind of a gimmick match. Jim Cornette managing Bobby Eaton, Stan Lane, and Paulie Dangerously. Paul Heyman bringing back the original Midnight Express, which technically before Bobby Eaton, Condrey and Rose were a tag team. Condrey and Eaton went on to be another version of the Midnight Express after that. And then Stan Lane obviously replaced Dennis Condrey. But yeah, so I was like, wow, I remember those guys. That was weird. What are they doing here? but yeah, in the main event, like, seriously. Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, the first of their famed trilogy in 1989. And they've had hundreds of matches previous to that, which I've gone back and watched the ones that I could find, and, you know, from 84 and stuff like that. I think they went all the way back in maybe 78, 79, maybe. I could be wrong on that, but holy crap. These guys are amazing. Amazing. There's even some Hidden Gems matches on WWE Network that you've never seen before from like 84 between Flair and Steamboat. But man, this match totally drew me in, especially with the finish, with the referee getting knocked out. And then Teddy Long, who was the referee back then, holla, 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 came in to make the three count, to count the pinfall. And Ricky Steamboat captured his first World Heavyweight Championship by defeating Ric Flair. And, dude, after that, I was hooked. I mean, I was absolutely hooked.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy, the Coach, from the WWE. Now, there are very few wrestling podcasts out there that I like, but this one I love. I love the name. I love the personalities. I love the content. Follow. Subscribe. I do. The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. That's where you're at right here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.
RTW Rewind.
Growing up in the Northeast, it was cool, you know, that I had cable. Not many people did back then, so I was fortunate to have that. And, you know, watching WWF on Monday nights on Primetime Wrestling on the USA Network, watching Superstars of Wrestling and Wrestling Challenge on Saturdays on WTXX, as I mentioned, getting WTBS was well, holy shit, you know, it was a game changer. I got to watch, you know, World Championship Wrestling, which was the name of the TV show, and it was for several years. At 6:05, everybody knows 6:05. It's funny how TBS had their time things. Everything was like 05. But 6:05 Eastern on Saturday nights, you bet your ass I was glued in front of that TV watching Jim Ross on World Championship Wrestling. It was incredible. I literally, 89 was such a good year for me, and I'm so fortunate that my parents made good money. And they let me order every pay-per-view that year. I had every WWF and WCW NWA pay-per-view in 1989 and most of 1990. And you know, from there on, I'd get all the WWF pay-per-views, not always the WCW pay-per-views, but when my parents got divorced, in 89, 90, I lived with my dad. And at one point, you know, right after that, my mom split, he wouldn't let me get any pay-per-views. So, you know, I had to go over friends' houses and watch and stuff like that. And then when I went and visited my mom on the weekends and stuff, you know, years out, you know, for, you know, every year after that, they would let me get, you know, the WWF pay-per-views and some of the WCW pay-per-views. But I was lucky to see every single pay-per-view in 1989. And, I love the NWA stuff. So Chi-Town Rumble really synced, you know, Flair and Steamboat mostly really drew me in. And, you know, from there I watched the clashes after that. Their second match was Clash of Champions in New Orleans. Clash 6, the Raging Cajun Clash, where Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat wrestled for almost an hour in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Terry Funk was returning to the NWA. He hadn't yet started wrestling again. He was a commentator, and him and Jim Ross did a fantastic job. I'm sorry, going back to Chi-Town Rumble, Magnum TA, who obviously we all know about Magnum TA in the car accident and how he was forced to quit wrestling because of his injuries. He was a really good and underrated color guy for Jim Ross. He did color commentary, and he was very, very good. And Terry Funk was great too. And Jim Cornette had joined on this clash as well. And man, watching Flair and Steamboat in a 2 out of 3 falls match with kind of a dusty finish. Ricky Steamboat made Ric Flair submit, I believe, in the second fall. Could be wrong. Maybe it was the first fall. At one point, Ricky Steamboat won one of the falls with his double arm chicken wing. And then that may have been the first fall. And then Ric Flair started working on his knee and all that. And Flair won the second fall. And if I got those two backwards, sue me. I'm old. But anyway, the third and deciding fall, Ricky Steamboat, who had his knee worked on for quite a while, went for the double arm chicken wing again. And his knees buckled, and as these knees buckled, Flair, he went to the mat, and Flair lay on top of him. And he got Flair in a bridge. He had Flair's shoulders to the mat. He was underneath him, and he bridged up, and he pinned him. But from another camera angle, we found out that Flair had his foot under the rope at the 3 count. So while it appeared that Ricky Steamboat had him beat, and that was the referee's decision, and back then the referee's decision was always final, Rick went to town and said, "My foot was under the rope. I didn't lose. That's bullshit. I want another match." Jim Herd, the dumbass president of WCW, vice president of NWA WCW, went on TV and he talked about it, and they said, "All right, there's going to be the rubber match, the third and deciding match, you know." And we had Wrestle War 89 from Nashville, which I hadn't lived in Nashville at that time. I was still in Connecticut. But just funny, I ended up here all these years later. But yeah, Wrestle War 89, the Music City Showdown. I remember Great Muta. He was supposed to take on Junkyard Dog in the first match. And Jay White no-showed, which is unfortunate. So Doug Gilbert took his place. Doug Gilbert was the brother of Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. Eddie Gilbert and Rick Steiner end up facing the Varsity Club for the U.S. tag team titles when that was still around, which was actually the main event. Funny, like a lot of that happened during, like, say, house shows when either Hogan had to hit double shots, you know, that one day, and he'd wrestle early and go wrestle somewhere else that night, or Hogan just wanted to go home, and they had the WWF title match in the middle of the card, and he bounced. But this was very strange. Not only was that a strange placement of the main event or the matches, you know, the world title match is not the final match of the night. It was actually part of the undercard, but they had a concert by country group the Oak Ridge Boys, which how could you forget that? And Elvira was their number one hit at the time. I mean, everybody wanted to hear that, but you know, to this day, it was weird. Wrestling fans look back on it and they're like, yeah, that was strange. I mean, we get why they did it, but nobody cared. Nobody there cared. And it just stopped the flow of the event. But, you know, there were good matches. We had Mike Rotunda and Steve Williams, also members of Varsity Club, took on the Road Warriors for the NWA Tag Team titles. We had a lot, you know, the third match between Flair and Steamboat. You know, Sting versus the Iron Sheik, which Iron Sheik wasn't even, you know, he was just a shell of himself at that point, even though it was only 1989. That was for the TV title, and Sting was the TV champion. Michael Hayes took on Lex Luger, and people give Michael Hayes crap for not being a great wrestler. And Luger, they put on a hell of a match, and that was for the U.S. title. And Luger was a babyface and the U.S. champion at that time, and he lost to Michael Hayes because the returning, and he didn't last long either when he came back, but the returning former Fabulous Freebird member Terry Gordy came back. Luger had his foot on the rope, and Gordy knocked it off so the referee couldn't see it. And Michael Hayes ended up winning the U.S. title. We had the debut of the Dynamic Dudes, which, how can you forget them? Shane Douglas and Johnny Ace. Johnny Ace. Johnny. Big Johnny. John Laurinaitis. A horrible... horrible gimmick, but they took on the Samoan SWAT team, Samu and Fatu, who became the head shrinkers later on. Fatu is the father of Fatu is Rikishi, the father of the Usos. We had Captain Redneck, Dick, who's a legit racist and a card-carrying KKK member from everything I've heard. Dick Murdoch taking on Randy Orton's dad, Bob Orton Jr., in a bull rope match, which nobody cared about. Yeah, I mean, it was a good event. But obviously, the only thing we'll really remember from all that is Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat in what many say was the best match of the trilogy. I'm torn. I've heard a lot of people say the initial one at Chi-Town Rumble was the best, which, you know, given the circumstances and the way Ricky won, I mean, I totally get that. I was always a fan of the 2 out of 3 falls match. But going back and watching all these again recently, you know, for the 30th anniversary last year, I was like, yeah, you know what? I think Wrestle War was actually my favorite of the three. And Flair and Steamboat put on another epic match. And Flair ended up winning. Terry Funk, who was a judge at ringside, because of all the controversy from the last match, they said if this goes to a time limit draw, we're going to have three judges at ringside, you know, like boxing. You know, tabulate points, however the hell they do that. Nobody even explained the point system. And we'll have a winner. And we had Terry Funk. We had former world champion Lou Thesz and former world champion Pat O'Connor. Three, you know, prestigious judges there with a lot of history behind them. Fortunately, they weren't needed. Ric Flair won with a small package, which is so funny because everything I heard about Ric Flair, he doesn't even own a small package. Became the 6-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Terry Funk came in after that match to congratulate Ric Flair, which is weird. I'm like, what the hell is he doing there? And not only did he want to congratulate him, but he also wanted to challenge him and be the next contender. And Flair's like, look, man, I'll do respect, Terry. You know, you've been out rubbing shoulders, you know, rubbing elbows and shoulders with Sylvester Stallone out in Hollywood, and you haven't been here in the trenches wrestling, you know, man. You know, you left. You went to Hollywood. We have a number one, you know, we have a top 10 contenders list, and you're not in the top 10. Funk got pissed, attacked Flair. Powell drove him on top of a table and didn't break it because back then tables, that wasn't even a thing. I don't even know if they play in that spot. Table didn't break, looked horrible. Flair fell off of it. Was laying there by the railing, and Terry put the table on top of him, grabbed the chair, and hit him with the chair, and you know, the top of the head. It was a brutal spot. Something I'll never ever forget. Especially Jim Ross's call of the whole thing, which is funny because, you know, Ross was doing the aftermatch interview, and once Funk attacked him, he left the ring and got back on commentary and just started saying, "Oh my God!" So just funny watching, you know, Jim play double duty, and we see Tony Schiavone nowadays play double duty and doing commentary and interviewing on AEW. But anyways, long story short, or long story even longer, depending on how you look at it, that was phenomenal. And from there on, man, I watched, I got the Great American Bash. Great American Bash was in July 23rd. It was always held in Baltimore. And that was the start of the, Ric Flair, Terry Funk feud. For a while, Ric Flair was wearing a neck brace, selling the whole neck injury thing. He had an interview from his house with Jim Ross, and he's like, "I don't know if I'm going to wrestle again." And, they won't let me wrestle. Eventually, he put up some kind of a bond. They suspended Terry Funk. That's right. They suspended Terry Funk for attacking Flair. And he paid, the suspension off and paid the fine and told them that he wants him in a match. And they gave it to him. So we had Ric Flair and Terry Funk at the Great American Bash. And then they wrestle again at Halloween Havoc and the Thunderdome cage match. Like, it's just gimmicky shit. Like, as a kid, I ate up, and I'll never forget it. It was this giant steel cage that they built, bigger than anything I'd ever seen before. It didn't have a roof, but it was like the size of like the initial Hell in a Cell. Like, it was huge. Like, it stuck out from the ring. It was so tall. And the tops of the cages slanted inward. So technically you couldn't climb out and you couldn't climb in. Otherwise you'd risk serious bodily harm if you did that. It was such a unique cage. And they had these vignettes leading up to it with like AC/DC music and all that. And like this big jacked like fucking blacksmith or whatever. Like these two blacksmiths building the cage, right? And like these two like huge muscle guys. I don't even know who the hell they were, but like whatever. It was hokey, but it was still cool, man. And they called it the Thunderdome, and it was electrified, which obviously it wasn't, because like you would literally hurt somebody. But I think there was a part up top that maybe had some electricity on it, and it was a gimmick. At least I think it was a gimmick before the match. I should have asked Gary Michael Capetta when I had him on if he knew anything about it. I'm going to message him and actually ask him about it when I get done with this, and I'll update you next week. But Gary Capetta was a former ring announcer during that time for NWA. So there, Tommy Young was the referee, and we all love Tommy Young. Everybody knows. Anybody that listens to podcasts nowadays, about Tommy Young, right? So Tommy Young was the referee, and before the match started, they're lowering the cage down, and Jim Ross was doing amazing commentary talking about it. Amazing. Like, setting a stage. He's such a great storyteller. And I guess there was one part that was gimmicked that may have had electricity or something in it, and there was like fucking cobwebs on the cage and like all these like rags or whatever. Like, it was Halloween Havoc. It was scary. It was dressed up. I don't know, whatever. They decorated the cage with all kinds of creepy stuff, right? Whatever. Google pictures of it. You'll know what I'm talking about. And one of these things that was on the cage, like a rag or something, piece of paper, I don't know what it was, caught on fire. Not a big fire, just something to show you that it was electrified, right? And Tommy Young was up there like slapping it and everything, trying to get the fire out. They got the fire out. They had the match. Whenever they So I guess the excuse of the cage was like the top of the cage was electrified, not the entire cage. So when they climbed up and reached a certain bar, that's when they would sell it. And fuck, hey, God is my witness, who knows? Like, maybe the top of the cage was electrified. I don't know. But, like, Muda would try to get out, and he'd climb up, and he'd reach a certain bar, and he'd grab me, like, he'd pull his hand away and shake his hand like it hurt or whatever. So, who knows? Like, WCW has done so many gimmicky things over the years, just like having, like, an electric chair match where they put Abdul the Butcher in an electric chair, which didn't work, and like the switch fell off the wall, or whatever, like just comical stuff. And this is coming from the Shockmaster kind of guys, right? So But I was, again, this match drew me in. I mean, Ric Flair and Sting against the Great Muta and Terry Funk, sign me up, dude, all day long. Like, it was amazing. It was so good. And Ole Anderson was there in Ric Flair's corner. And obviously the manager of Muta and Funk was the late Gary Hart. And there was no pinfalls, no submission. Your manager or your representative had to be the one to call it quits. And Bruno Sammartino, who was in a heated blood feud with Vince McMahon at that point. Bruno Sammartino was there. He was the referee. He's from Philadelphia. So he was a special guest referee. He was the enforcer. He wasn't going to let anything happen. And yeah, the winner of the match had to be whoever, if your opponent threw in the towel, whether it's Gary Hart or Ole Anderson, they'd be the ones who decide the match by throwing in the towel for the team, signifying that they give up and they lose. a little bit of chicanery going on. Ole Anderson ended up punching Gary Hart, who had the towel in his hand, and he let it go, and the towel flew in the air and landed on Bernard Sammartino's shoulder, and he grabbed the towel and he looked over and he's like, "Oh shit, yeah, they Gary Hart threw in the towel. Flair and Sting win, even though Funk didn't give up and he's in the figure four." Either Funk or Muta. I think it was Muta. No, it was Funk. One of the, anyway.
RTW Rewind.
And then I watched the Clash of Champions 9, the New York Knockout. That was the final match between Flair and Funk. It was an I Quit match, and I watched it again, a few months ago, and it still holds up to this day. Literally, like almost like a traditional hardcore match that we saw, in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was just a knockdown, drag out, chairs, tables, a very vicious Ric Flair, and it's not typically his style. He was brutal in this match. These guys brought it. It was stiff as hell. And still one of my all-time favorite matches that I could still watch. And it holds up to this day. And eventually, Funk lost. Gary Hart was pissed off at him, smacked him around. Funk knocked him out, essentially becoming a babyface commentator after that. And not wrestling any for several years after that. And then Starrcade was the last event that year. Starrcade 89 Future Shock, where they had a tournament. It was something different. No titles on the line, nothing like that. It was a singles tournament and a tag team tournament. And it was Jim Cornette did the commentary with Jim Ross during the tag team version of the round robin tournament, and Terry Funk did the commentating for the singles. And it was cool, man. It was Doom, Ron Simmons, and Butch Reed, who are still under masks. They were with a woman who was Nancy Benoit, the late Nancy Benoit. And Nitron, who was a Canadian actor and a professional wrestler known by Tyler Mane. He was actually Sabretooth in X-Men, played Ajax and Troy. He played Michael Myers in the remake of Halloween and Halloween 2. Nitron, big, huge, jacked up guy. Didn't last long. But he was a big dude. Not sure why his wrestling career didn't take off. But so we had Doom. We had the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott Steiner, who were, God, they were so over back then. And so good. The Road Warriors were obviously involved as well. Who else we have for tag teams? The New Wild Samoans. I guess the SST had broken up. It was the Samoan Savage and Fatu. Samu was gone. The Samoan Savage was also known as Tama and the Tonga Kid from WWF. And he had a pretty good run there. Doom didn't win a single match. That was the one thing I remembered from all this. And after that, when they unmasked and they teamed up with Teddy Long, let me tell you, Doom was over, and they were such badasses, and they became the tag team champions, had a really, really good run. But in this tournament, they sucked. Another funny thing of note about this tournament on the singles side, we had Sting, we had Lex Luger, we had Ric Flair, and we had the Great Muta. And the Great Muta didn't win a match either, which is funny because up until that point, he was undefeated and never had lost and never been pinned on TV and had a really good run and was the TV champion. And, dude, I don't know who he pissed off. I don't know what happened. But after this tournament, he was obviously pinned, what, three times or lost three matches. I don't get it. I really don't. But there was a point system. Don't even ask me. Like, there was a certain amount of points for pins and submission or count out and disqualification. If it's a draw, obviously there's no points awarded. So in the end, the Road Warriors won the tag team division or the tag team tournament, which was really, really cool. And Ric Flair and Sting faced off to determine who's going to win the single side. And that really started to fuel the flames of the Ric Flair and Sting feud that was to come up. I have it here. The point system, 20 points for a pinfall or submission, 15 points for count-out victory, 10 for disqualification, 5 for a time limit draw, and 0, obviously, for a loss. So going into the finals, Ric Flair was up 25, Sting had 20. So this really was to determine, and Lex Luger had 35. So this was to determine, you know, who the winners were going to be, as well as, you know, the Road Warriors beating the Steiners. Steiners had 35 points, and the Road Warriors had 20. So the Road Warriors won, giving them 40. And Ric Flair lost to Sting in a small package. So funny how that small package follows Flair around. but there was so much drama involved. And Arn and Ole Anderson came down after the match, and we didn't know what was going to happen. Arn Anderson was just back, fresh off his WWF run with Tully Blanchard as the Brainbusters. And they got in the ring and looked at Sting and shook his hand, raised his hand up in the air. And after that, Sting became a member of the Four Horsemen. So it was only Arn, Sting, and Ric Flair. And from then, they set up a feud in 1990, which, you know, I'll cover at a later day. But yeah, that was my my fandom in 1989 on the NWA side. I loved it. I loved it all for different reasons. You know, I loved the showmanship and the larger than life characters and athletes of the WWF. You know, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Demolition, the Rockers, all that. But then here in the NWA, you know, we had Ric Flair, we had Sting, we had, you know, the Steiner Brothers, the Varsity Express, you know, the Varsity Express, the Varsity Club, the Midnight Express, you know, Doom, I mentioned the Road Warriors, Lex Luger, you know, Ricky Steamboat, Terry Funk, all that. It was such a good year. And both rosters were stacked, if you really go back and look at it. But, you know, two completely different presentations and two completely different, unique styles of sports entertainment, of wrestling. You know, we had the Saturday Night's Main Events of WWF. You had the Clash of Champions that were free with NWA. Clash of Champions in New Orleans was on April 2nd. It was on free TV on TBS. It was there to counter-program WrestleMania 5 from Trump Plaza, which was on pay-per-view. So a lot of that back and forth took, you know, happened over the years between NWA and WWF. But it's my favorite year. I'll never forget 1989. You know, was my absolute number one favorite year for watching wrestling. And it follows me to this day, you know, what, 31 years later? Yeah, 31 years later. You know, I'll never forget the stuff I saw back then. I can't remember what the hell I did yesterday, but I remember, you know, every main event from every WWF and NWA pay-per-view from 1989, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95. It kind of gets fuzzy around then. And, you know, once we got In Your Houses and all that shit later on, there was just too many pay-per-views. I can't remember them all. But, you know, I remember this stuff from back then, so long ago, like it was yesterday. But yet can't remember what I did yesterday. hilarious what happens when you get old. Don't ever get old, seriously. But thanks to Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, you know, they really drew me in on that side on the NWA. And as I mentioned last time, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, you know, the Mega Powers and their feud, you know, drew me in on the WWF side. Just if you haven't ever gone back and watching that stuff, it's all on the WWE Network. This is not an advertisement or a shill for them, but it's just, we're so fortunate to have all that footage saved and on the WWF Network for us to watch, or WWE Network for us to watch. So I hope you enjoyed that walk down memory lane of my fandom in 1989, watching NWA and WCW. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, it is at RadRobGaming. Check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, streaming every Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Central, every Sunday afternoon at 2 in the afternoon. And check out my YouTube gaming page. It is called RadRobGaming. If you want to follow our show on Twitter, it is at RadTurtlesPOD. You can send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. Facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. Please leave us a like there. And check out our Pro Wrestling Tees page. It is ProWrestlingTees.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. We will have a new shirt up for sale in the next few weeks. And we have some big announcements that are coming, some changes that we made regarding our programming. Nothing changing for you. But I'll get into that here in a week or two and let you know the big news that we have that we're unveiling here in the next week or two. So stay tuned for that. I will be back on Saturday for the flagship. And we're changing up the flagship as well. Too many review shows out there. Takes me way too long. Even condensing the reviews down for Raw, SmackDown, and you know, AEW and NXT, it's a little bit too much. Plus the news and all that. I'm going to be giving you my favorite parts of the week and my least favorite parts of the week from all organizations, as well as the news and polyester, and that will make up the new flagship. It's always evolving, always changing. I'm always trying to stay ahead of the trends and things and trying to bring you guys the best in entertainment. So I hope you appreciate all the stuff that I put out for you guys, because I do work really, really hard at it. And I hope you enjoyed this show. I'm loving RTW Rewind. I love talking about my memories. As scattered as I may be sometimes, I'm just shooting from the hip, not planning anything out, just kind of speaking as I go. And I hope you enjoy the interviews, because, man, I've had so much fun talking to the legends of wrestling over the last few weeks, you know, between, you know, Jim Brunzel, Neil Pruitt. I got Dusty Wolf coming up next week, former WWF enhancement talent. You know, part of that crew with Barry Horowitz and Tim Horner and all them from back in the day. He's coming up next Tuesday on Rewind. Like I said, Jim Brunzel, Nikita Koloff, Big Vito, Neil Pruitt, everyone I've spoken with have been fantastic. I've had so much fun. Tracy Smothers. How can you forget Tracy Smothers? What a freaking fantastic guy he is. But I'm so blessed. And we have more to come. And there'll be some weeks where I may be a little light. You know, I don't want to be, I said at the beginning, I don't want to be guest dependent. But with the overwhelming response of, you know, the first show, I moved it to two shows. But I mean, we have lots of content coming up. So even if I don't have a guest, you'll have something, whether it's more memories or a watch along or something. Like, we're going to be bringing you all kinds of stuff on this show. But it is a passion project of mine that I love and hold it dearly in my sweet little heart. But I hope you guys enjoy it. So, until then, guys, thanks for listening. Be well. We'll see you right back on Saturday for the flagship. Take care, guys.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod, and you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, only here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.